Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Saturday, the 30th of November, and I'm recording at 3:55 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, let's take a look at the global stock market cycle, such as it is. And Wall Street and a number of other stock markets had, as you recall, bottomed back in the first quarter of 2009. So we've had almost 5 years of a bull market run. And then some of the other markets that had led on the way up, not least the ASEAN indices, such as Indonesia and Thailand and Malaysia and the Philippines, they had actually bottomed out in the fourth quarter of 2008. So they've had a little over 5 years of a bull market. So that's a fairly significant move, not only in percentage terms, but in time span. And it compares really quite favorably with your average bear market. Now, we also know that we've had a huge monetary stimulus, not least the quantitative easing in the United States, and that was matched also in recent years by a more stimulative monetary policy, vastly more stimulative monetary policy by the European Central Bank as Mario Draghi took over the helm there in 2011. And then more recently still, we had Japan starting just about a year ago with the Shinzo Abe regime and introducing a massive monetary stimulus. Now, all these stimuli are still in play and still supporting the stock market moves overall. But if we look at what's happened to some of the leaders, first, the ASEAN sector, and not too many people are focusing on this, but I do think it's really quite important because the point I'm about to make is that the leaders tend to lead in both directions. And the ASEAN stock markets had phenomenal moves to the upside. They pretty well dominated performance throughout the bull market cycle, and then peaked back in May of this year. One of the coincidental factors that I think had coincided with that was the rise in Japan, and more specifically, the weakness of the Japanese yen, and that was a sensible and long overdue policy, in my view. And I mentioned this on many occasions because Japan had been saddled with the world's strongest currency for, on average, for several decades. So, as the yen began to weaken very sharply, though, that did put some pressure on the ASEAN markets. But I think the main pressure was that just they had a phenomenal move overall, and they have clearly peaked for at least the medium term, and I think that's a little bit of a warning for some of the other markets. Then there's Wall Street, which has had a fantastic move. A lot of it is justified. I think most of it is justified on the basis of what I'm always talking about, the U.S.'s energy advantage, thanks to fracking, and also the USA's expanding lead in the technology field, and that's hugely important, and it's becoming even more important as these technologies accelerate in our current era. It's a very, very exciting time overall. Now, if you look at the U.S. stock market indices, they raise a few eyebrows because in the last few months we've seen the strongest and most persistent rise throughout the entire bull market. All of the major U.S. indices are well above their 200-day moving averages and are at least some of the most overextended levels that we've seen throughout the bull cycle. And really, you take the lead sector, which has performed so well, the NASDAQ index, whether you're looking at the NASDAQ Composite Index or the NASDAQ 100 Index, and I post them both, and of course they're in the library, you see that they are well overextended in terms of the MA, the 200-day moving average, and also relative to what we have seen earlier in that nearly five-year bull market cycle. So those are warning signs quite clearly. And you have a lot of optimism, or we see a lot of optimism regarding the stock market. And yes, there's still some caution overall. This service has been very bullish in terms of the recovery prospects, and not least over the last year overall. But I'm also commenting, both Owen and I are commenting on these overextended conditions, not on the basis that some sort of bear market is imminent or any dramatic risk increases, but the fact is that when markets are pushing upwards as persistently as these are, valuations are going up, a point also made many times, and as valuations go up, and we're in a latter cycle of a bull market run in all probability, then risks are increasing somewhat. Some people have talked about the possibility of a bubble, and I think they're right to talk about that. That's not saying that we have bubble conditions, obvious bubble conditions at any rate, in the U.S. market right now. I think that would be premature. But I don't think we, equally though, I don't think we want to be in the position of saying, well, it's nothing like as big a bubble as it was back in 1999 and 2000, and when many of the indices were trading up at 30 times earnings, and then you had infinity earnings for the tech sector because so many of those companies weren't actually making any money. So don't compare it with the most extremes, because we don't want to get back to an extreme bubble condition, I would say. Some investors may say, well, that'd be just fine if I can ride that in the short term and get out when it's looking most dangerous. And I understand that a line of thinking quite well. But in pointing out a big picture scene here, the obvious point is that the U.S. market is certainly frothy. We certainly do have some clear bubble conditions that are developing. Look at some of those internet stocks that have been floated over the last few months. Look at the valuations that we see on some of the multinational retailers. Those are also some of the economies, the autonomies that we like a great deal. But you know, when these things, wonderful companies such as Nike, one of the great autonomies, when that's trading up at 25, 26, 27 times earnings, it is getting a little frothy, to repeat that that phrase overall. That doesn't mean that one doesn't stay with it while it's consistent. I think technically I would stay with it while it is consistent. And when I say technically, I mean you can look at the charts on that and see that action. And as long as you're getting these consistent uptrends, marked, of course, by those higher reaction lows. That's an informed market, but it comes to an end. None of these things go on forever. And when those runaway moves to the upside lose their uptrend consistency, the risks obviously increase. Now, the big factor fueling these moves is, of course, the quantitative easing that's actually taking place, and that's what's lifted the valuations across the board on Wall Street over the last year, and particularly over the second half of this year. A number of people will have also come forward and said, well, you know, the valuations aren't all that high because corporations are doing extremely well. Now, that's a point that this service has often made, and in saying that don't look just at governments, because governments are in trouble, not least with the unemployment problems that they're seeing, and obviously with the reluctance of consumers to spend on a sensible reluctance of consumers to spend on anything like the style that they did in the build up in the latter stages of the last secular bull market, which ended in 1999-2000. But the more cautious approach on the part of both corporations and also consumers obviously leads to slower GDP growth, and that's what we see with the national economies. But a number of the autonomies have come out of this rather well, because they cut costs a lot. They part of that, yes, it was cutting personnel numbers. And they're also in the prime position to take advantage of all the technological developments, buying smart machines. They are also in a prime position to play global markets because they're big international players on the international scene. And instead of having to sell only in their own country, they can sell all over the globe. And that's a phenomenal environment for the corporations, as you know. But what I will also add, though, so a lot of their growth at earnings, most of it indeed, is absolutely genuine. And these are well-run companies and very strong. But what we also know is that they have been buying back more of their shares, and indeed in some instances they found it economic to actually borrow to buy back more of their own shares. That drives their profits higher, and they can actually increase dividends somewhat, but not be increasing overheads against that background of less supply in terms of their total shareholdings. So my point is the share buybacks have flattered the earnings picture here somewhat, and I think we need to factor that in as well. Well, which markets actually look most attractive here today, right now? Well, certainly Wall Street's very much informed, but it's also very overbought, so the risks there are increasing. Japan, a market that the service has liked enormously this year, and we're giving Shinzo Abe's policies the full benefit of the doubt here so far, and a number of analysts have pointed out that Japan sells at basically half the U.S. valuations in terms of book value. I take their word on that point. because if you look at the Japanese yields and the Japanese multiples, they're no better off or no more attractive than what we actually see on Wall Street. But on the book value basis, there clearly is an advantage here for Japan. And it hasn't had, more importantly, it hasn't had the huge long run to the upside, the 5-year run to the upside that we have seen for Wall Street. So I think Japan is in the latter stages of this medium-term consolidation, which, if you look at the weekly charts, really represents no more than the first big step above the base formation. And it looks quite capable of completing that pattern here, possibly before year end. The only reason I'm a little bit cautious about that is because if Wall Street were to turn down sharply sooner rather than later in a mean reversion move, then that might well hold Japan in check for a little bit longer. But I would expect a strong Japan in 2014 relative to other stock markets, just as I expected a strong Japan in 2013 relative to other stock markets. Now, another market that also looks really quite interesting now is China. And it does appear, less on the A-shares if you study those, but even the A-shares are beginning to firm up, that China's and valuations on China here are really quite cheap, and you can see this across most of the indices, with price earnings ratios, and we only get the historic price earnings ratios, but they are in the 10 to 11 range, which is very, very attractive relative to Wall Street. And the yields have also improved somewhat over the medium term. So this, among the bigger stock markets, and one that still has the one of the stronger growth rates in the world, albeit slower than the growth rates that we became used to earlier in this decade, China really looks interesting. My biggest concern about China, and I hope this isn't something that we have to worry about too much, but we certainly can't ignore it, is the military aggression that we're actually seeing. It's almost as if China is trying to take control of all the disputed territorial waters in that region. And this is something of concern, not least to Japan. And that's probably the flashpoint, if there is a flashpoint, between Japan and China. And Japan, although it is rearming rapidly, is no match for China. But all the other countries are in that area are actually concerned, because there are they all claim some, and I think quite legitimately, some fishing rights and also offshore drilling rights. So what's China actually up to here? Well, it has the muscle, and it's beginning to flex it a little bit. Ambrose Evans Pritchard, in his piece, I think it was last Tuesday for the Telegraph in the UK, said, well, and in tongue in cheek, and also I've repeated it, and also optimistically on my part, well, this is a great fiscal stimulus. This is exactly what these countries need. Strong fiscal stimulus to help them jump their economies up into a stronger growth rate. And it's helping to do that, needless to say, but it's also dangerous. and something could too easily go wrong. So in terms of flashpoints, we've been focusing pretty much on the Middle East for a long time. Now we have to consider, do we have a flashpoint in the Asian region, and that would be far more serious. So it's a situation we need to actually pay attention to. My own view is that it would be insane for China to push ahead with an aggressive policy, because there are the obvious risks involved, and there's so much to gain just by helping this entire region of Asia to develop its enormous economic potential, which I think and hope will actually occur over the next few years. But I haven't just recently worried about eventual China bellicosity. It's a point that I've made on a number of occasions over the years, and it's something that obviously a number of other China watchers have also mentioned, that as China grew stronger, we should not be surprised if we saw a somewhat more aggressive and more assertive China in terms of its policies. We'll see how that plays out. But right now, among interesting markets and big markets, I've put China and Japan, really Japan in the post position, and then China as interesting situations, which I expect under normal circumstances, which would not involve military conflicts, I would expect them to both do well in 2014. The U.S. shouldn't do that badly in 2014, but I would think it might be an underperformer relative to Japan and China, not least because of the current valuations that you see today. And also, we do know that there will be some unwinding of the quantitative easing in 2014. And that's going to create some turbulence. I've talked about this for months, that a wind down will create a lot of uncertainties. It will be removing not the punch bowl, perhaps, but it will not be refilling it to the same extent. So I would not expect Wall Street to see another year like 2013. I think that's virtually impossible here in the near term. We might also see a superior performance. I think we will see a superior performance from the European markets, largely because they have lagged so much. But now the economic recovery there is certainly fragile, as you know, but the monetary stimulus is going to stay really quite strong. And these indices, European indices, are performing well here right now, and the patterns can certainly support further gains, and I think the valuations can also support further gains. So I would expect the Euro area markets, and I think also the UK, to outperform Wall Street in 2014. As well. But I also feel that 2014 won't be anything like 2013 for most stock markets, and I think it will be more choppy, and much more choppy than the last few weeks that we've actually seen. Now, on a longer term basis, my guess, and it can only be a guess in terms of these long-term opinions, is that we're going to see a choppy phase But nothing like the severe bear markets that we saw in 2000, beginning in 2000 and beginning in 2008, for the major stock markets, at least not on the basis of any information or factors that we're aware of here today. And one of the reasons why I expect that overall choppy action is that we will see a over time, and it won't all happen at the same time, we'll see a wind down of these huge monetary stimuluses. And that will create a less of a tailwind here for these stock markets overall. And I think for the United States, I view it really as sort of a medium-term consolidation phase where valuations will probably improve, because if we get a largely sideways market activity, albeit choppy, but the primary direction largely sideways, that we will see valuations improve because corporate earnings will still be rising due to global GDP growth and also the technological enhancements that these companies are taking advantage of, and also their competitive energy position. And that's a very favorable situation for the USA overall, as you know. Okay. Beyond that, beyond those next few years, I still maintain that the probabilities are that we will see clear evidence of a secular bull market developing in global stock markets, with Wall Street being one of the key leaders to that process before the end of this decade. Well, that's a long way off here right now. But my major premise, and I don't have enough time to go into that again in full detail, but in this audio, but it's something that I've discussed on so many occasions, is that we have the technological innovation being a huge feeder of a secular bull market. We have the what I suspect will be lower energy prices in real terms than we see today. So we'll have some, and we'll have less risks, I think, in terms of energy stability, as more of the renewables and the fracking come on stream. It isn't occurring on an even basis. I say Wall Street's way ahead here right now, and some regions are vowing, such as Europeans are vowing, not to ever allow the fracking. I'll be surprised if that doesn't change in time, just as it's changing in the UK here right now. But that again is another of my major forecasts here, that energy costs will be more stable and slightly less in real terms for a good many countries. That would certainly help global GDP growth. Also, the fact that the overall economic emphasis is now fully capitalist, whether it's democratic capitalism or whether it's command capitalism as managed in China. And this is a much healthier global environment for strong economic growth in the decades ahead than what we were dealing with and looking at in 1982, really, when that last secular bull market in equities actually began. So that'll be a big driver. Then we have the higher population, we have the spread of the growth of the middle classes around the globe. These are all very, very positive bull factors for the long term. And I know you've seen the charts, but when you compare the secular bull market that occurred after World War II and carried into the 1960s, and before it had become quite frothy and overextended. And then we had that long sideways ranging phase with a glass ceiling on the Dow Jones Industrial Average at a little over 1,000 points. And that was the long valuation contraction, or described by some people as the secular bear market phase, until 1982. And then in 1982, that long, strong secular bull market, which carried right on into 1999. And so, again, since 1999, the end of 1999, we've seen this long, choppy, difficult period of valuation contraction cycle, correcting a lot of the excesses from the latter stages of the previous secular bull market environment. And that's the background that I see, that we're in the latter stages of that period, and I see the new secular bull market, as I've already said, being underway in the next few years. But first, expect that choppy ranging phase overall. But that's not something to fear significantly. It'll be just a little bit more of a buy low, sell high environment in terms of medium-term investment activity. Elsewhere, long-dated government bonds, a very different script here, because the secular bull market, in my opinion, ended last year. That was the secular bull market of those declining yields for over 31 years. And therefore, we're only at the, you end a secular bull market and you are in a secular bear market, virtually by definition. And that's what's actually happened here. So we've seen we're only in the first year of this secular bear market for long-dated government bond yields. I expect them to push higher over the next decade and probably more. Not immediately, obviously, with global GDP growth quite slow and central banks anxious to keep these bond yields down. But they, let's face it, they were driven to artificially low levels, which are unsustainable. And we are going to get back to normal GDP growth figures, and we are going to get back to normal interest rates, and that will mean certainly higher long-dated government bond yields. And that makes the bond markets a dangerous place to be, particularly in the actual bond funds. Because if you go out and buy a treasury bond, so you go out and buy a 10-year treasury bond, okay, you would almost certainly be underwater for a fair portion of the next decade, in my opinion, on your if you were to have to sell that position. And the yield isn't all that brilliant either, is it? But at the end of the 10 years, you get your money back. Well, that doesn't happen in a bond fund because they're just rolling these positions over. I think they're actually quite risky, and there are some very substantial investments in those bonds, to put it mildly. I do think that transfers of capital weightings away on a gradual basis from bonds towards equities will be a fuel source here for the equity bull market equity secular bull market that I've talked about developing before the end of this decade. Now, currently, with these long-dated government bonds, we're in a medium-term consolidation, and when those U.S. 10-year yields which are just a little above the 2.7, 2.7 and a bit here right now, when they start to push back above that 3% high that we saw back in September, then might become a bit of a headwind for Wall Street equities. But it'll depend partly on where Wall Street equities are at the time. In other words, will they be overbought or will they be somewhat oversold at the time? But if it were to happen today, for instance, which it can't, but hypothetically, if we saw a sudden surge back up to that 3% level and above, I think that would certainly trigger a mean reversion setback on Wall Street. Looking at long-dated government, looking at the commodity markets here right now, let's take the precious metals sector. There's still a chance. I don't regard it as that big a chance, but maybe a 40% possibility that gold and silver are going to hold here a little above their June reaction lows. Now, they're obviously not far above those June reaction lows. They are ranging, but we haven't seen anything like the significant dynamics that I think we upward upside dynamics that I think we need to see to provide evidence that strong demand is coming back in at these levels. I don't think, with all the liquidity that's sloshing around the globe and going to continue to slosh around the globe, I don't think that gold and silver are expensive at these levels. But we know that there are some very aggressive short positions in the market, and they haven't had anything to frighten them out of those positions, or nothing's taking place in the market right now to actually frighten them out. So it is quite possible, and in other words, if it's 40% that these lows hold, it's 60% that the current bear trades that we see in place and the bearish talk that we're seeing about the precious metals can force another move to the downside. Now, if that does happen, and it's a probability rather than a possibility, I think that will create a much more interesting situation overall. I mean, you get gold, if we were to see gold back down near the, it's currently at 1,253, by the way, on the spot bullion, and the low back in June was just above 1,180. If we were to see gold down anything like close to the $1,000 level, I think that would be extremely attractive, and I would certainly be accumulating it for my long-term investment positions. But right now, I'm watching with interest, as I say, and have no investments in gold. Industrial metals are quite cheap, I feel, but we haven't seen the cycle from producers in terms of producer activity change significantly enough. We've seen the drop in demand, but producers need to cut back a little bit more. They've been doing that, and I think they will actually do that a little bit more, cut back a little bit more on the production to improve the overall demand for these industrial metals. I think that's something that we will see taking place in 2014, and I'd be surprised if industrial metals, I will be surprised if industrial metals do not end 2014 at higher levels than we are seeing here near the end of 2013. Among foods, that's very much a weather punt. Among the food, the agricultural commodities. I hope we get the broadly favorable growing conditions that we saw in 2013. Prior to that, we had 7 biblical years of bad crops due to adverse weather conditions overall. But that changed this year, and hopefully we'll have a little bit more luck in that respect as well. Certainly, that would be good for global GDP growth if we do not see those food prices running up too sharply overall. Now, last but not least, in terms of actual currency markets, I think there are several currencies that are quite important to the stock market forecasts. One is the Japanese yen, and that's at 102.44 against the U.S. dollar here as of Friday's close. So back above that $100 level overall, the yen is weak against most of the world's other currencies right now. And Japan certainly needs this. The yen is less extremely overbought than it was a year ago, but it needs to be lower here really to underpin Japan's export-led growth and recovery. And I think that will actually happen. So I would look for a yen declining down to at least the 120 level over the course of 2014. And that would, again, underpin that strong performance by Japan that I've actually been talking about. You had the opposite situation with India right now. India needs a firmer currency, and I think its central bank governor is trying to support the rupee, and the crucial election that we will get in the first half of 2014. I think if we get Narendra Modi in as prime minister, and when I started talking about that, not many people thought that was remotely possible, but I think now I'd be surprised if he's not the current favorite, and hopefully remain so, because he's certainly got a great business brain. And if he were to get a workable majority, so big ifs, has to get elected, has to get a workable majority, I think that would be extremely good for India and India's stock market. And it would also firm the Indian currency quite considerably. So that's an interesting situation to look out for. As far as the U.S. dollar is concerned, Owen and I are of the view that on a long-term basis, the dollar will strengthen. And that strengthening will be underpinned by its competitive energy position and its lead in technological innovation. And those two factors, particularly the energy factor, will lead to further moves by corporations around the globe, manufacturing corporations, to the USA. So that long outflow led by U.S. companies pushing a lot of their development capacity overseas, a little of that will come back, And more importantly, though, we will see more companies from other countries wishing to open manufacturing plants within the United States. You won't get all of U.S. manufacturing coming back to the States because all these autonomies are going to want to keep their suppliers closer to their actual markets for obvious reasons. But I think that those factors that I mentioned will ensure a stronger U.S. dollar, and I'm not talking about a big dramatic move overall, but that the dollar will be just a generally firm currency more often than not, really from, it'll probably assume that role before the end of this decade if we get GDP global growth getting back to normal levels as I actually expect. And I think that's really quite likely. But here in the short term, the Fed will want to keep the dollar well under control. And so it's going to range for a longer period of time in this big, long type 3 base formation development that's actually underway. I think the ECB will be very keen to keep the euro from appreciating too much over the next few years as well. The ECB or the European Union rather could not really afford that with their fragile economic recovery that they've seen to date. It would be less harmful for the USA. So I would expect the dollar to gradually appreciate against the euro over the next few years. And China's currency remains strong right now, but it's very politically controlled. So all the very best to all of you, and we're all looking forward to, or at least I hope you're looking forward to, the new FT Money website and library on Monday. Meanwhile, enjoy the rest of your weekend. All the best.